Ever feel like you're living the same day over and over? If mom life feels like an exhausting whirlwind of laundry, dinner, driving, and frustration on repeat, you're not alone. For every other thing we do in life, there's training. But for the most important job, we're just figuring it out as we go. Mom University is here to change that. It will give you the skills and education to break free of old patterns and be a leader in your home. Thanks for enrolling in Mom U. Class is about to start. Hello and welcome to Mom University. I'm your host, Chanel Nielsen. And today we've got Mansi Parikh joining us from Coaching and Compassion. Mansi, welcome to the call.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for our conversation.
Yeah, Mansi is a fantastic guest because she is all about teaching conscious parenting. And so I'm excited to dive into this and learn a little bit more about what you do and how it can help us as parents. So a quick introduction, Mansi is a certified conscious parenting coach with a background in communications and psychology. Her mission is to bring purpose back to parenting. Parenting is harder now than ever before, and we have lost so much of the joy and passion behind what parenthood can offer us. In working with her clients, Mansi is able to help her clients and community make sense of their parenting struggles and turn them into parenting successes. Okay, I want this. I'm ready for this. Let's dive in. I feel like I'm going to learn a lot this episode and have a lot to learn in this area. So to start off, I'd love to hear just a little bit more about you and your background. So what got you interested in parenting coaching?
My goodness. Well, I mean, I think the word is in right in there as far as what got me into parenting coaching, but it was parenting. It was my own parenting. I was blessed with two babies at once, which I couldn't have ever imagined. And I started to find that my world was just feeling completely turned upside down. A mom of any number of children kind of has a way of putting us through like a turmoil and undoing us, if you will. And that's exactly what happened with me. And I noticed that being a little girl who grew up always fantasizing about motherhood, about what it would be like to play with babies and to raise children and to play with my dolls, I was like, man, I thought this would come so naturally to me. And yet it felt so difficult. I would often look at my toddlers without, and I didn't have too much support. And I just felt like motherhood was staring at me in the face saying, what are you going to do about it? And I think it took me those really humbling moments of hard parenting times with two babies to be like, this motherhood experience is going to be what I make of it. And from my own experience, I think I needed the coach that I became today. And that's exactly what drove me. I've always had a passion in working and advocating for children and specifically our own and inner children. So that's what led me. I saw a certification and it drove me right into it.
Okay. So interesting. A couple of personal things. One is I wanted twins so bad with my last baby, with my number five, because we have a gap between number four and number five of 7 years. And I thought, oh, he's going to be all alone. So I actually prayed really hard, like, please, can this just be twins and get two for one and just be done last pregnancy? But he was not twins. We just have the one little caboose at the end and it's all working out. So it's all okay. Now you brought up something that I think I've heard over and over, and I know I've felt this idea of like, I wanted to be a mom. I've got some experience with either in my own family or with working with children, whatever. And yet being a mom is just so, so different. So my question for you is, when did it hit? Obviously with twins, that's a whole different ballgame. When did you just feel like, wow, I've gotten in over my head, or this is so much more than what I planned for? Is there a certain age your kids were?
Yeah, actually, I think it was the three, just like the beginning cusp of three, two okay. Going into three, which is ironic because I think we all take to children at different ages. Like my husband yes. loves that age and I'm like, I want the small 6-month-old in my hand.
Yeah.
But given the circumstance of my own family and the grueling hours that my spouse had to work and was working 80 hours a week on average, just trying to make things work for us, I think I thought that it would come to an end sooner, and it wasn't coming to an end given that he was in a long-term schooling to yeah. learn for his career. And it just wasn't ending. Things weren't getting better. And I think I just got to a point where I realized that I wasn't going to be able to change my circumstances unless I did. And it was like a gradual progression of me realizing that the same way that I show up, the shadows that come through us as parents, they come out one way or another. Kids have a way of drawing our shadows out. Those shadows coming out, me doing the same things again and again, responding and reacting the same way, and realizing that not only is it not impacting my kids in a positive way and getting the result that I want, but man, I don't feel good. I don't feel good when I show up this way. And I think I got tired. I think that's the only thing I can say is that I started to get tired that the circumstances outside of me aren't going to change my situation. But if I change how I show up, that was the ticket that changed everything.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. I love that. So there's a lot that we'll dive into as we go along and really figuring out more about what we can do and how we can do this. But let's talk a little bit now about conscious parenting. So you studied conscious parenting. Is that different than the way that you were raised?
Oh goodness. 100% yes. In fact, I
Okay.
think conscious parenting sets itself apart from any kind of parenting because it doesn't have anything to do with the child, really. It has so much to do with the parent. I was the daughter of hardworking immigrant parents, and their main focus was trying to make sure that we had a steady roof over our heads, that they were trying to make their trip here to the US worthwhile, to make their families proud. Their agenda in getting us settled here was so different that there wasn't too much room for how do I parent? If I parent this way, how will that impact my child? And I couldn't go back and have it gone any other way. It's because they did those basics for me that now I can focus on my parenting, but no, absolutely not. And a lot of my motivation, a lot of my passion for being a conscious parenting coach is because of my own childhood experience. And I love that I get to heal now and do it differently with my own kids.
Yeah, I love that. I do think, obviously our backgrounds do play a role. And I think it's interesting too. It's also a generational thing in a lot of ways. I think that we see a lot more. There's a shift in our parenting now, right? Versus the last generation. And so let's talk about a little more about what this means. So, one of the things that you say in defining conscious parenting is that conscious parenting focuses on energetically connecting with your children. So, what does that even mean?
So, energetically connecting with our children, I think we have to start at the fact or start by acknowledging that we're animals. I think that given the way the life that we have, the way it appears, we almost seem like we're these like really fancy beings, but we're no different than the mammals and the different animals that we see in the world. And we have these like basic needs, but the way that animals communicate is so energetic. If you look at the sounds that a whale makes within the ocean, it's so energetic. It is something that is felt. It's communicated energetically. So is, when an elephant puts its paw or its foot onto the ground, it can feel the energy and can feel if danger is on its way or if rain is on its way. And so similarly, we forget that while we communicate through our behaviors, our actions, and our words, underneath that, we're communicating through energy. So, when we walk into a room, God forbid any of us have to walk into a funeral, we can feel the energy of that room versus walking into a wedding versus walking into a party. And so, same thing, energetically, what are we exuding without saying any words? Our kids are picking up on that. From ages 0 to 7, our kids are living in a state of theta. So, their brain waves are pretty much in a state of theta where they're in a hypnotic state. They're kind of just absorbing everything. And so they're absorbing our energies. What kind of energy do we come home with? What kind of energy do we meet them with in a hard situation? That's what they're picking up. And then that's what they're adopting to be like, oh, this is what it means to be a human. And so energetically means connecting in with how we're feeling inside. I think a good like first place to start is our feelings. Our feelings is what then will tell us what our energy is and how we're showing up. So it's mainly just how are we showing up and being very conscious about us? So, if we're upset at our children and we're triggered, what about that interaction is triggering? What's causing that reaction within us? And how much of that has to do with our children versus how much of that does that have to do with us? It's that consciousness around that that interaction with our children that really gets us deep diving into what's happening within me and invites that consciousness there.
Yeah, okay. I have to say, it's cool to think about. I definitely agree. We know that. I like the examples that you gave because we can feel it. We can feel, you walk into a room and if someone's been, in an argument, even though you're after, and even if they're putting on a smiling face, you feel something's just off, right? You just know. But on the flip side of this, that sounds really hard. Like if we're basing our parenting on that, like dang, that's harder than just following a checklist. If you were just to say, okay, we're gonna get our kids up at 7 a.m. and feed them, whatever healthy breakfast, and those little checklist items, at least for me, are easier than all of the emotional work and the energetic work. Because, and I think that's because it's constant, right? So talk to me about that a little bit, because how do we, constantly be in tune, or do we even need to always be aware and know what we're portraying to our kids?
Well, I love that you said that. And in fact, you said something earlier that I think would tie in beautifully here. You said, I think it's a generational thing when we weren't raised this way. So if we haven't learned something, when it comes to learning something new, it is going to be difficult. It is going to feel very, very foreign. And so here we are learning a new skill that we're trying to adopt, not only for ourselves, because we need to figure out, like, oh, wait, I have a feeling about this. I had no idea. But
Yeah.
then translating that to our children, and it is hard. And I think that's the beauty of this generation of parents, because we are cycle breakers. And I think that we've taken on that hard work. As far as doing it all the time, listen in, because you do not need to do this all the time. But I will say this, when you start to learn consciousness, it kind of becomes it's like a muscle. It's like a muscle. And even when you work out, say you're working on your abs, getting ready for the spring break or summertime, you're working out real hard. You've got this wonderful core strength that you have, and then you stop working out for a while. It does go away, but it's still there. The muscles are there, they're just quieted. And so, same thing with our consciousness. Once you have consciousness, it's there with you. And I'm at a point now where even if I want to ignore it, I can't. I'm aware of it. But my awareness also beautifully creates space to mess up. To mess up, because I mean, I say this all the time, but I always tell my kids that what do dogs equal? Dogs equal barking. Cats equal meowing, humans equal mistakes. We are going to make mistakes. We are meant to make mistakes. So when we make mistakes, there's room for that awareness. If we don't make those mistakes, we're not going to learn, grow, and evolve. And so my awareness not only helps me identify why I'm feeling a certain way, why I got triggered, or why I'm reacting to my child, but it also creates space to be like, wow, it also offers space for compassion. Like, I get it. I get why you said that. And you know what? You're a good mama. You got to keep going. And when we calm down, we can make some time to repair and move forward from that. But no, we are humans. We are going to make mistakes. That includes us mamas. We can't possibly get it right and be attuned all the time. And in fact, research shows that a mother who is not attuned 100% of the time, but 70% of the time, is actually quite exactly what a child needs. They need to see that 30% of mess up.
Oh, I love that. Okay, so much room for grace in there. I love this idea that humans equal mistakes, and that 70% of the time, that leaves us plenty of room for error. We're allowed to mess up, and it's part of the process. So that's beautiful. Now, I imagine in your work that when parents come to you, they don't, well, maybe they do because you've talked about conscious parenting. Is that what they're coming to you for? They say, I want to be a conscious parent, or do they come to you with certain challenges? What are people coming to you with most often?
Oh, I get a whole host of different things, but I get different things. Like, I can't get my child to listen. That's a very common one. Or I oftentimes get, I'm trying to do the things that I think are working, but I keep resorting to reacting to my child and I don't like it. Or I get that I have a non-neurotypical child and I'm kind of out of my space of trying to figure out how to help my child thrive in this world. I get older kids and younger kids, but all in all, I think the question that every parent is asking me underneath whatever concern they come with is, am I a good enough parent? How can I figure out how to be a good enough parent? What does that even mean? And so they're coming in with one particular question, but it has so much more to do than just that one question. And that's where we kind of go in a little bit deeper. We go in a little bit into their past. We bring them back into the present. We kind of see how the past played so much of a role in that same interaction that they had because they couldn't get their child to put their shoes on for school, and how that relates to so much for themselves. And then when we can heal what's on a deeper level, even if they don't know that it's there, they're able to re-enter that situation completely differently. And again, it goes back to the energy. So when the parent shows up energetically differently, the child also shows up differently energetically. And so it's this really beautiful, like magical experience. I mean, I'm just certainly not doing any magic, but it feels very magical, the change that when a parent shows up differently, the people around them automatically change.
So can you walk us through an example of what this looks like? Because let's say a parent comes to you and they're like, I can't get my kid to listen. I think that the tendency is probably for people to say, this isn't a me problem. This is my kid's problem. My kid isn't listening. Like, fix them. And then in this work, you're talking so much about the parent. So what's some of that conversation? What does that look like? And what kind of things do you uncover there?
I'll give you an example of myself to make this easier because I can rag on myself. So I remember this one time where my daughter, my kids, they go to, they had gone to, they were in elementary school, they were in first grade. And when I would go and pick them up, I would, rush on over to school and I'd be so excited to see them. I'm like, oh my God, I miss them all day. Like, I can't wait to see them and give them a hug. And immediately I met with a very, very upset 7-year-old. My 7-year-old daughter, who wanted nothing to do with me, is giving me major attitude. If I breathed incorrectly, it was upsetting for her. If I didn't open the door, or if I did open the door, I couldn't figure out how to get it right. But just feeling that, like, really, really deep disturbance that, like, why can't, as a mom, why can't I get it right? Why can't I have a well-behaved kid? Why can't I have a grateful kid that I parked really far away and I walked all the way over here to come get you? And just feeling like a sense of, like, am I even parenting? Like, what's going on? We get home and she takes off her backpack, throws it on the floor, and then goes on to throw herself onto the floor. She's very distraught at this point, and I'm very triggered. And I know better that my first line of defense, if I'm ever triggered and I don't know what my move is going to be, is not in a way to abandon my child, but I take a moment for myself and I walked away. Walked away, set their lunch boxes down in the kitchen, and I was on my way back, still triggered, and my foot landed on a very sharp Lego that put me in a place where I had to sit down. And because I had to sit down, I had to take some breaths. When I calmed myself down and I got myself back into that present moment, I went back over to my daughter and I got down on the floor with her and I just hugged her. And she was crying, she was screaming, she was upset. And I just hugged her and I didn't say a thing. I didn't know what there was to say. There was nothing really to say except that I'm here and I love you. And I think that hug lasted about a minute. And she got up and ran off to play like nothing had ever happened. And I think that what happened was that that situation, though it seemed like it had everything to do with her, I think we forget that there's so much room for our children to have emotions. In that moment, she wasn't listening to the requests I made. She wasn't listening to the rules. She knows that when she comes home, she has to put her backpack in a spot, take her shoes off. She knows all the rules, but she wasn't able to do any of them. And it wasn't necessarily a discipline issue. It was an emotional issue that she needed to have someone hold space for her. And so when I was able to do that, that need was met. And I think we often forget that emotions actually want to flow through our body. They don't want to get stuck and be harbored. And it takes 90 seconds 90 seconds for emotion to go through your body, peak and flow out. And I think that she showed me that, she proved that to me because she was able to be held for that much amount of time. And that emotion was done and gone. And so I think when it comes to like discipline or even things that when parents come to me, again, it's that do we have room? Do we have space to hold for our children? Just like when we have a hard day of work, we want to come home. We might say something sideways to our partners. We might just need to be held space for, given space. And I think we forget at that with our kids. They're just not very savvy or mature as us to show their tantrums in a more mature way. They're just kind of like raw. They're just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to shop my way out of this. So I'm going to throw myself to the floor.
Okay, I love that example. And it just seems very, okay, yes, I can do that. But there's so much work going on behind the scenes with you to get there. You mentioned earlier, you said that kids draw our shadows out. And I want to talk a little bit more about that idea of what that means, and maybe even particularly using this example that you just went through. So you explained what was going on with your daughter, and she needed to process her emotions, and you were able to be there for her. What about you? Like, where are you going in your mind with all this? What are some of those shadows? Why is this so difficult for you?
Yeah, so what that difficulty and that trigger for me was, first of all, our children having emotions, in this case, my daughter having big emotions, was the trigger for me. I think many of us, in whatever culture or background we come from, like you said, it's so generational. We oftentimes were kind of perceived as children are to be, seen and not heard. So big emotions were not very encouraged. They were very triggering for my own parents. And so, for my child to sit here and have big emotions, for me to witness her in that, it took me a minute to come out of my own trigger. We're oftentimes living in our inner child. It takes great practice and healing to learn that our inner child is just here to visit us and to communicate, but we are not her. We are not him. And so that was the trigger for me. The trigger also was for me is the same question that my clients come in with is that, am I a good enough mom? What am I doing? That inner critic coming through, that is a big trigger for me. That's something that I've developed over time to keep myself, like safe. If I keep myself on my toes, criticizing myself to keep myself at my best, then I'll be okay. And so we do these things, and those are those shadows. And so when my daughter was meeting me with big emotions, the shadow was wanting to yell at her. It wanted to come out. And I was at the point where I knew that it didn't serve me or her. And I had that moment of pause to really recollect myself and knew that it wasn't going to serve either of us. And I was able to respond to her instead of react to her. And every time I did that, and I think this is the part that almost makes me really emotional, but that time when I was on the floor hugging my daughter, I think that we can take that opportunity to also really embrace our inner child, the versions of us that went unseen, unheard, unvalued, or unworthy, whatever our story may have been in small, big, very many moments, or just like occasional moments, and really hold that self and say, you're safe, like you're good, I've got you. It's not just our kids, but it's for us too.
I love that. I love that. So powerful. And I feel like when we do that, when we include our own work in there, in that process, we're going to just show up better and better for our kids. Now, I love this example. And it makes me curious because although I have a 7-year-old, I also have older kids, and it looks a little different as kids get older. So, how does conscious parenting continue to address different ages and stages of children's lives?
Oh my gosh, I have clients who have adult children. So this can go from any age. And again, it's because I'm working with the child within us. So working with, for example, teenagers or even young adults, when it comes to teenagers, I think we have to take a moment to really bow down to the teen body and the teen mind because all of us have been through this, and either we had some pause or we had a parent to really like hold us through this, but many of us didn't. But your body is making tremendous amount of changes, as are their minds. They have no idea how to make sense of themselves. They have no idea like why they're feeling the way that they are. Their bodies are doing things they don't want it to be doing, or it's changing. It is a really difficult, oftentimes sad, depressing, triggering time period for teenagers to go through. So as a parent, when we see our children going through this, it is that opportunity again to show them their worth, that their body is changing, your minds are changing, that you are still worthy and you are accepted in all of your changes, and that we're here to see you through. It's also really important for that matter to also be placing boundaries as a parent. Because our children's minds are kind of taking them all over the world, inside and outside, it's important as parents that we remain their parent, but a friendly parent. I like to use the word friendly parent when it comes to our teenagers, because they need a friend, but they don't need a friend. They need a proper figure that they can look to place boundaries, to make sure that they're safe. And that oftentimes gets unnoticed or unaddressed. Either the parent is too focused on the child and their every move, or they're almost like, anything is fine, anything goes. I just want my kid to be okay and happy. An example I love to give for this is if you were to take a piece of paper and put rice on it, and you were asked to walk from one side of the room to the next, that rice is going to bubble and bounce up and it's going to fall down. But if we were to take a bowl and put that rice in there and then walk across the room, it's going to stay in place. And that's what a boundary means energetically. We don't want to contain it where the rice can't move. We just want to hold a barrier and emotional space that it can do what it needs to do, but within a safe capacity.
I love that visual because that helps us see, that boundaries are protective and a good thing. And I love the concept of friendly parent for our teens. Something you said in there that I wanted to pull out, which I think applies to this whole conversation, is show them their worth. I think, even with young children, as you're sitting there and holding your daughter on the floor, that's what you're doing. Your emotions have worth, your feelings have worth, you have worth. And you are saying that at the same time to your own self, your own inner child. You're doing that for your teenagers. I think that's kind of the theme of what we've talked about today and of what you teach. I think it's so powerful and so good. So I am really excited that you will be joining us for Mom University in April. So tell us why you're excited to come to Mom University.
Oh, goodness. Well, this is a really great event that you're putting together, and I'm really excited for the camaraderie. I think that going back to being that young first-time mom, it's so funny because there's so many of us mamas around, but it's so difficult for one reason or another for us to be a support system for each other. Either we're buried in children and the work that goes around it, or we don't know how to reach out to a friend, or we don't know what to share or how to even explain what we're feeling. And I think that I love this opportunity for the event, that really just creating a sense of community and knowing that there are other women who not only are wanting to bond over motherhood, but bond over growing in our motherhood, not just bonding over womanhood, but growing and evolving and as being a woman and what that means to us. And so that's really something I'm looking forward to.
Oh, good. I love that. And I think you're so right, because there are other opportunities where we can go to play dates and kind of gripe about whatever. But this opportunity to grow together is really, really powerful. So thank you for that. Now, where can people find you and learn more about your work?
Oh, I'm definitely most active. You can find me on Instagram at Coaching and Compassion. I offer lots and lots of free tips and tricks that you can do real time on how to deal with your kids and what situations you're dealing with there. And you can reach out to me there for any questions, but definitely on my website as well. And that's at www.coachingandcompassion.com. And happy to work with parents and, talk further about parenting there.
Perfect. Well, Monsi, thank you so much for being here, for all the things that you've taught us. It's great. I think that I'm walking away from this episode with a stronger determination to just show my kids their worth. And I think that's something that's going to make a huge impact in my family's life and in the lives of our listeners.
I love that. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening. If you're a mom whose days feel like Groundhog's Day and you find yourself wondering what you're doing it all for,
join us at our in-person Mom University event. You'll get the support, tools, and help to become the mom you want to be. For details, go to universityformoms.com.